This time of year, the gear means more. The logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome back to the second guest show. Mike DiTeglio along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, live from the Silver Slipper Casino, beachside here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Come on by and visit us. We'll be here until 8 o'clock tonight. Got a full house here at the Silver Slipper for Labor Day, so we appreciate everybody showing up, talking a little bit of LSU and a lot of LSU and a little bit of the Saints. Also tonight, want to wish my wife, Linda, a happy birthday today.
It's her birthday today. Happy birthday,
and
Linda.
And so she's kept me alive all these years, so to speak. And so I appreciate it, honey. So happy birthday to you. Also, Bob, I was going to tell you the story about Randy Mueller, because we had this conversation probably days after they picked Deuce McAllister in round one. So he asked me, he said in your draft book, how many – kind of mock drafts you go to. I said, Randy, I'm to the point now. I'll do three or four and I'll stop. You know what I go back to? The first one. It's always the best for me.
The initial instinct.
The initial. Now, I might do a little changing somewhere down the line, but I would say 80% of it, I stuck to it on the first draft. He's like, Mike, we did about 30 mock first rounds and only one time did Deuce McAllister be there when we picked.
And then, plus, we already had Ricky Williams.
Had Ricky already on the team, but he said, you understood why we might have been looking around with Ricky even on the roster because of the fact Ricky, he had a lot of distractions. Questioning his talent.
He's
now
a little flaky.
But, man, when he was in the right mood, he was one hell of a football player. You just look at those stats for Ricky, and he was a really good back in this league. But he kind of danced to the beat of his own drum.
Smoke weed every day. So what?
Today, that wouldn't have been.
It didn't even matter.
That wouldn't have been a bigger
issue. But Ricky Williams is outstanding, I think. Outstanding, but I don't know. That's a – how do you judge that? But, no, he was an NFL player, whether with the Saints or the Dolphins.
And the thing was, it was just the high cost that it took to get him here to New Orleans.
But that's Mike Ditka's fault. I mean, there's no way Randy Mueller was on board with that.
No. That was Bill Kuharik there.
Oh, Kuharik,
Bill was there because
Randy came with Haslam.
After.
I got you. Afterwards. I got you.
And, what Mike wanted, Billy sort of said, okay, coach, I'll go along with you on that particular deal. And Mr. Benson was to the point where, from somebody who would know, told me that Mr. Benson was, if they don't accept this deal, give them an extra first-round pick. That's how badly they wanted Ricky Williams.
Well, okay, listen. Saints organization, don't get mad at me. I'm going to tell you the truth. And Ms. Gail Benson. You know, she loves the team. She wants the Saints to win. From a football perspective, from a football knowledgeable perspective, I'm telling you, Tom Benson did he ever know more than Gail Benson, his wife? You say Gail Benson, okay, what does she know about football? But she knows she wants for the community, organization, the team to win. I'm telling you.
You would know a lot about
Tom Benson. When Tom first came on board in the middle 80s and he's watching his practice, he wanted to know, and he said this, why we have the different uniforms on? Aren't we all on the same team? I'm like, what the? No, you got to have practice, offense and defense. He thought we had the same. No, he was a businessman, a car dealership. But I'm telling you, St. Aloysia and all that, he did not know anything about football. So when you say, like, oh, when Ms. Gail Benson, does she really know football? She don't have to know football. She has to hire the right people to run the organization. And I'm telling you, and I'm not nothing against Mr. Benson. Now, you can become more a football fan and Holly loved the team and all that, like Ms. Gail and all. But I'm telling you, Randy Mueller and those likes, Mickey Loomis and all, no, you got to have the right people. Because as far as the ownerships, that Tom Benson did not know more about football than Gail Vincent. That might hurt some people, but that's the truth. I mean, what do you really know about the game?
What he knew about was making money.
Yes, yeah, no,
that part he knew about.
I don't argue that at all. I'm just talking about the game of football. What do you really know about the game of football?
Hugh Culverhouse's daughter, Gay, and we had her on the show a number of times before she passed away. She had told me that a lot of times he would vote the way Hugh Culverhouse or Art Modell would
old
vote.
School.
That those guys had a lot of influence on league matters.
Yes.
On what they were doing.
Old school owners. That's almost like the George Halas mentality with the from the Bears.
And Hugh had a lot of kind of tentacles out because he also, Georgia Frontier was somebody that Georgia voted exactly what Hugh voted. Kind of Hugh had the people, six or seven different people that voted exactly like he voted.
And Georgia Frontier, she's been accused of like murdering her husband, drowning her husband.
Well, Carol Rosenblum.
Yeah, Carol Rosenblum. He would talk about that could be, that Lifetime movie.
That would be definitely a three-parter.
Yeah, anybody investigate that? I mean, no.
That kind of got swept. And,
oh,
man,
exactly.
A lot of people with the Rams and their organization, players, said there's no way he died like what people are saying.
He's swimming the ocean every morning, and all of a sudden he kind of disappeared. And he said, oh, see, them scuba divers are coming and pull him under. And then, that's some shady stuff there when you look at that.
And
all of a sudden the Rams leave L.A., go to St. Louis, and now they're back in L.A.
And you think about Carroll. He traded his whole team, basically traded franchises, when Jimmy Irsay had the team in Los Angeles. So Carroll became the owner of the Rams. Jimmy Irsay took over for the Colts in Baltimore.
It just shows you the network. You look at the Hunt family. We had the Dallas. The Kansas City Chiefs used to be known as the Dallas Texans.
Yeah.
And then they moved, became the Kansas City Chiefs. So you look at the history of ownership, it's amazing what has actually occurred. And I can tell you, because I was playing at that time, late 80s, early 90s, Mr. Finks, Jim Finks came so close but so far from being the commissioner. For being, this before Paul Tagliabue, this is like being the Roger Goodell of the NFL, being the commissioner. Now, what do you need, like 24 votes?
And Eddie DeBartolo, Jerry Jones,
Robert Kraft. All the younger owners, they were like, all the old school owners wanted Jim Finks because he's a football guy. They said, we don't need no damn football guy. We need like a lawyer or a business guy that knows business of football. So they hire Paul Tagliabue, who became the commissioner. He's one of the main reasons why the Saints are still in New Orleans. He was an antitrust lawyer. Ain't know nothing about football. He's an antitrust lawyer, but he knows the business of football. So Robert Kraft, Jerry Jones and all, they come to their phone. No, this is the cat we want. That's kind of what occurred. Now,
and he had a good relationship with the Players Association president, Gene Upshaw.
Gene Upshaw. Yes, it's all about you want labor peace. You want a collective bargaining agreement between labor and management. You always want that. It's going to happen in 30-30. You always want peace. That's what the networks want. All the money. We don't want no damn strike or stop play. We want labor peace. And that's why you look at Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell was probably, what do you call that when you go?
He was the
mail clerk.
Exactly.
When he was
the junior.
Yeah, you're building your way up, and they trusted him. And he was like the one getting people's mail and stuff. And then all of a sudden, he's the commissioner.
A lot of people tell you today, they really think Jerry Jones is running the NFL, and I would not argue too much about it.
Well,
I think Jerry's got tremendous influence on the NFL.
And Roger Goodell does the dirty work.
It's your fault.
No, and then think about a lot of us. I can look at everybody right here. Luke, I can look at you. Luke, I'm going to give you over $40 million, but people might get on you and call you SOB, and you got to do all the dirty work. I think you might take that gig, right?
$40 million a year. Luke will take it. I'll do a lot less.
He'll take
a lot less.
I'm telling you, that's what Roger Goodell's hired to do all the dirty work for the owner.
He has become the Secret Service agent. basically for Jerry.
No, okay. We're going to put you out there, Goodell, and you got to take all the hits. You got to take all the hits for the NFL owners.
We'll be back with more second guests right after this break here on the Big 870. We'll have on with us, man, he's covered college football for a long time. Also, he's teamed up with Armin Katayan with a book, The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football in This Era of Chaos. John Talty will join us right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We're back here at the Silver Slipper Casino, Beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi. It's our second guest show. We in our final hour here on this Labor Day weekend. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, co-authored the book, The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. Co-authored the book along with Armin Katayan. John Talty, who has covered college football for a long time. John, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Appreciate you guys having me on.
John, one of the things, and you hear it no matter what fan base. I don't like this NIL, this transfer stuff, anything else. Now, for LSU fans, they don't like it until they get a Joe Burrow and Jane Daniels. Then they love the transfer portal NIL and that particular deal. And you're more concerned about what you're getting in than what you're losing, so to speak. But this isn't going to change. A lot of people, oh, it's going to change. And no, what you got now, this is what you're going to see in your lifetime, that it is a chaotic situation because it's really the Wild Wild West right now, where a lot of things are going on that, you know, most things we know about, but there's some things we don't. This is not going to change dramatically in the next 10, 15 years.
Well, to your point, LSU fans might not like it, but I bet last night as they were watching the game, they wish they had a stud defensive end that could have made an impact, right? And, you know, we think back to over the offseason, Brian Kelly saying LSU, you know, like, we're not in the business of buying players when they couldn't get a defensive lineman. Well, you know, that's the game that we're in right now. That's what's happening. And so, you know, fans, it's a weird time. And I do think that, you know, 10 years from now, when we have salary caps and rev share, we might look back at this period and think that, you know, it was kind of weird that we were making average fans have to pay, you know, to get players to their favorite schools. But that's where it's at right now. It'll change in the future. But this is the world that you're forced to live in. And coaches are frustrated about it, and they don't like certain aspects of it. But within that, you're seeing schools that are being aggressive and they're innovating and they're trying to capitalize, you know, on what the rules are right now. And I think a perfect example of that was this past weekend where, you know, one of the best performances that I saw, and I was watching football all day, was, you know, Cam Ward down in Miami. I mean, Miami has been a team that struggled a lot. It's only one game. You know, we're not crowning them yet, but you know, they looked really good, and it's because they have a really good quarterback who they bought out of the transfer portal. Like, they would not have been able to do that a few years ago, and that just adding Cam Ward has, I think, completely changed the trajectory of that program. So that's the high-level impact. You mentioned Daniels, Burrow, you know, guys like that can completely level you up if you're willing to, you know, lean into it. The programs that, you know, want to not do that or keep their head above that, you know, they might start to fall back, and we're going to see some of that this year again too.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and you look at it, either you keep up with the Joneses or you set the trend, and you look at two extremes. And example, now I know it's the beginning of the season, but you look at Ohio State, my understanding that they, as far as name, image, and likeness and all, they put up to $20 million. And then you got Dabo Sweeney and Clemson, who all of a sudden got spanked by the Georgia Bulldogs. Now, I'm not saying, you know, they were going to beat Georgia, But that was kind of embarrassing. And so how do you view, like, going forward, Clemson's approach, and then you look at Ohio State? I say, well, I don't know what the rules are today. You got to be more like Ohio State than just be hard-headed and take the Clemson approach.
Because, John, you know this as well as anybody. Paying players, that didn't just happen a couple years ago. It's always happened. But now it's legal to do.
Yeah.
100%. I mean, let's not be naive here. I mean, there's plenty of things that have been happening, beneath the surface for a long time now. And, in my book, we tell this story of, what it was like for Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher, down at LSU back in Baton Rouge, to try to understand when those guys got in their big fight a couple years ago. And, things were happening back then too. I mean, this is just the way it's always been. Now the money was less. It was meant to be, again, hidden. It might have been, a smaller amount. It might have been, getting a parent or a relative a job, and that kind of setup. But it's been happening forever. But you're right; like it's easier than ever to do it if you want to do it. And to me, I come back to a saying that you really apply it to any walk of life. But football coaches love to say this: like, it's adapt or die, right? And if you are not willing to adapt to the way the game is changing, you're going to fall behind. And I think Dabo, it's such an incredible story as a human being, right? All the things that he had to go through as a person and the struggles he had and to win two national championships at Clemson. Like, it's a once in a lifetime. It's a once in a generation type thing. And I've always wondered if that maybe leads him to be a little bit more stubborn, and one of those, like, he shouldn't have even gotten this far. So it makes him want to double down on his own beliefs even more so. And I think that's led him to the struggles that they're in right now, where it's not just the transfer portal stuff that obviously gets talked about a lot. They're just blatantly disregarding it, which most coaches would tell you that's not a great idea. But they also haven't embraced the NIL the way that other schools have. And, that's where you see a program in Clemson that feels pretty clearly on the decline. And, that's an unfortunate spot for Dabo and I think for Clemson as a whole, because the ACC feels wide open right now. Doesn't look like there's a dominant team. Florida State is losing to Boston College right now. After already losing to Georgia Tech, they were the hot team. I mentioned Miami. Miami looks great, but Miami's had plenty of problems the last couple of years, especially winning close games. Like, this feels like a year that Clemson should be, the ACC winner. And if they had been willing to adapt more and be more aggressive, I think they easily could have won. And it's still possible that they could. But, the team that I saw against Georgia on Saturday felt like, almost like just two different worlds, right? It's a team that has embraced the modern game of football, and there's a team that's holding on to what worked in 2015 that doesn't feel like it's going to work in 2024 anymore.
Yeah, you look at how things change rapidly. You just look at, we won't even know, my understanding, I don't know, I was watching a 60-minute episode about artificial intelligence, AI. And about that, a lot of things are going to rapidly be happening before even 2030. And I'm thinking, man, that's a handful of years from now. Half a dozen, 5 or 6 years. And I was like freaking out just watching this and how things are going to rapidly be changing. And, you talk about name, image, and likeness and, look at the transfer portal. But, NCAA knows they can't win in the courts and being a capitalist society and all that. So, I mean, I even said this, I think, way back in February that, Mike, we were doing a show, and I think you're going to have players going to be employees at a university. Then you have some kind of, you talked about the salary cap, some kind of collective bargaining agreement. And because it is the Wild Wild West, and I don't know if you get the government involved in legislation and all that.
Well, I hope not.
But I'm saying,
they can't solve the problems they own.
But the whole thing, I could see where the players now, you're going to end up being like employees of the school.
And I think people wonder if that's actually in their best interest. They have it pretty good right now. There's not the structure. I think there are people that think it ends up that way. I don't disagree with you at all. And I think there's some people that think that's going to be a really good thing. But I've heard other people say, like, there's never been a better time to be a football player right now, because, you can transfer multiple times in a single year. You're not under contract. We have the transfer portal windows, but we've seen guys who, started at one school last year. They transferred in December, transferred again in April, and they're on their third school in, less than a year. And that's based on the way that it is right now, where there's no real regulation or rules. I think coaches, for you guys know this, coaches want control. They've always wanted to control, and for a long time they had control. They don't have as much control right now. So I think a lot of the ones that I talk to, you know, whether it's being employees or, again, just having them under some sort of contract, they want control. They want to know who's going to be on their roster year to year. They don't want to think, all right, this guy's going to be the future of our program, and then all of a sudden he pops into the portal because he has a bigger offer somewhere else. You know, I thought Lane Kiffin, as ridiculous as he could be at times, I think has been really smart about this whole topic. And he made the point that certainly hit home for me, where he said, you know, imagine if in the NFL, in the middle of, or at the right before the playoffs start, you had free agency. And it's like, yeah, we would never want that. It'd be insane. Well, look at college football. You know, the transfer portal window is right in the middle of the playoff run. And so just imagine how stressful it would be for a Sean Payton, or, you know, before he got let go by the Patriots, Bill Belichick, having to manage the playoffs and free agency at the same time. That's why these coaches are under so much pressure and why they're so frustrated. They just want to know that they have, you know, all right, I've got this guy under contract for 2 years. You know, he's not going anywhere. I don't have to worry about him. I got to worry about this other guy who's coming up, whatever it might be. So whether that's as an employee, collective bargaining, there has to be some sort of mechanism to get these guys to have more of a structure and more control. Because right now it's just, you know, it's like you said, it's the Wild West, and that's, you know, frustrated everybody but the players, who are certainly, you know, benefiting financially and otherwise based on, you know, the lack of rules that currently exist.
Okay, so yeah, the rules that exist. So you look 2024, and even you can go into 25, but let's just say 24. And you mentioned Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. And I mentioned Ohio State. To me, a team that will also be relevant, I don't know how the Oregon Ducks cannot be relevant, considering because their facilities and Phil Knight and Nike. So it seems like that no matter what the rules that the Oregon Ducks, no matter even if you don't know where Oregon is in the Great Northwest, they'll have a lot of stroke, even though they're in the Big Ten now. Is that a fair assessment when you look at, well, in your opinion, who's the haves and the have-nots? Because you mentioned Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss. I agree with that, his approach. You look at Ohio State, you look at Oregon. I mean, well, who would you put in your top five in that category, or if you have a different team than I do?
John, one of the things Bob had brought up, you think back years ago, how relevant Oklahoma State has been, and the one name, T-Bone Pickens, and what he did for that school.
Oh, the facilities in Stillwater.
Not everybody has a Phil Knight or a T-Bone Pickens, but think about what Pickens did for Oklahoma State, and especially on the athletic side of things.
With their facilities, yep.
No, absolutely, and that is the Phil Knight impact. And, you know, we have this, we tell this story in the book where this NIL agent was, you know, trying to get a deal done with Oregon. And, like, you know, it was a big deal. It's a competitive kid. Multiple schools are involved. They want to do it with Oregon. And he said, we had to wait for Phil Knight to wake up to get the deal done. You know, that's how involved he is in trying to, you know, push Oregon over the top. So I agree with the ones that you mentioned. You know, the other ones that come to mind for me, I mentioned Miami earlier. Miami's been very aggressive from the jump. It has not always worked out for them. I would say in some ways they were like the early like problem child of NIL, where they were throwing a lot of money around and it did not show up on the field. But I do think what they did this past offseason, getting Cam Ward from Washington State, getting Damian Martinez from Oregon State, it looks pretty good so far. Texas is one. They've been very aggressive. I mean, I don't need to tell you guys, there's a lot of money in Texas, a lot of oil money. They don't have maybe that one T-Boone Pickens, but they've got a lot of guys who are very wealthy, and they've been spending big the last, you know, couple years. And then Tennessee, I think, has been one that has been pretty aggressive from the start. That's a program that, you know, had been down, I think, the last, you know, decade or so, went through multiple different coaches. And I think NIL was a good opportunity for them to really galvanize the fan base and say, hey, like, we want to go back to being at a respectable level. If we're going to do that, everybody's got to kick in. Everybody's going to have to spend more. So there are different ways to skin the cat, right? You could have that super booster like a Phil Knight. Ohio State's got this guy. I think his name's Les Wexler, the Victoria's Secret guy. He's been, you know, very generous to them. And then other schools, they just have a lot of rich guys, and they're all kicking in a good amount of money. So you got to have money to play in this game. If you don't, it's going to be very challenging. You know, you can try to moneyball it, and they're – different programs that are trying to do that right now. But, you know, the teams that we're seeing for the most part at the top of, you know, the coaches poll and, you know, the rankings, they're, a lot of them are the schools that are spending the most right now because they realize the value and they realize that there's a, you know, there's no salary cap right now. You can spend as much as you want. And so, you know, this is not a bad era to try to go all in and try to spend maybe a little more than you would typically want to try to win. And I think Oregon, Ohio State, Ole Miss, some of the other ones that I mentioned, seemed like that was their approach this offseason.
John, with Tennessee, is Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Browns, a big player in that for the Volunteers?
He is, yeah. He's one of the guys that we've heard. Now, they have a really smart group of guys, so it's, you know, they're not only reliant on Jimmy Haslam. But, yeah, we've heard that, you know, Haslam is very involved. And, yeah, as you mentioned, he's Cleveland Browns owner. He's made quite a bit of money in his career. And, again, having a guy that you can go back on, you know, like that, hey, you know, we really want this kid. Can you help chip in? You know, you need people who are willing to have that money that they can throw in a pretty fast situation. And, you know, having a billionaire NFL owner as one of your top fans is not a bad position to be in.
John, the book, The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos, you and Armand Kantayan got together to write this. Is Amazon.com or favorite bookstore best place to get it?
Yeah, I mean, Amazon.com is, you know, probably the easiest. You can probably buy it right now and it'll, you know, be at your house in a day or two. But anywhere that you like books, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, local bookstore. We love local bookstores as well. Whatever's easiest for you. Amazon's a great spot for it. And I think people are really going to, you know, enjoy this book.
How long did it take for you and Armand to do this together?
About 2 years. We kind of started and stopped a little bit. You know, I think it really kind of started about, you know, 2 years ago. And, you know, as you can imagine, a lot changed during that time frame. So we, unlike Dabo, we had to adapt a lot over the course of this book writing process. Otherwise, it would not have worked out. But, you know, we kind of had a general idea, and then we evolved along the way, and then, you know, ended up with what we did, and which, you know, we feel really good about it. And I think it's not only a super relevant book right now that I think fans will really enjoy, and there's a lot of good insidery details about Nick Saban and Jim Harbaugh and guys like that. But I really do think, like we've talked about tonight, like 10 years from now, we're going to look back at this period and think about how wild and chaotic it was. And I think this will be a fun book to read a decade from now. Like, wait, that was happening back then? We were okay with that? And so that's what I'm hoping. It's got a short-term and hopefully a long-term value to readers.
You know, and when I think now, when you see Coach Saban in all these different commercials and you see him on College Game Day, now, I just want your opinion on this. Do you think Coach Saban, how quickly things change, that he would have retired? Or, you know, because kind of like it was abruptly, you know, when kind of like, oh, he announced this be my last season, whatever. But I think he took the approach is that I'm going to recruit high school kids, and all of a sudden they're in their teens, and they're telling me how much you're going to pay me. And then they say, well, am I starting or not? And then, you know, old school, because Saban's older than I am. I'm like 64. I'm like, he's probably thinking like, what? He ain't even competed yet. Well, what? And so I think it just like I said, okay, this is a sign. I think that Coach Saban said, okay, I'm going to fade off into the sunset.
John, I think one of the things Bob brought up, or he didn't bring up, is a guy asking for money just to visit a school.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
not talking about signing. Right. I'm talking about visiting a school. That's unbelievable today, but yeah, they got the upper echelon guys. For a visit, they get paid.
Yeah, and so what, you think that maybe pushed Coach Saban maybe to a year maybe earlier or what? Or what is your take on that? I know George overtook him, you know, and that's one of his pupils, and Kirby Smart, but at Georgia. But what's your take on Saban? I think he'll do fine.
He'll do good on TV.
But I still think he could have continued to coach.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think he absolutely went earlier than I think we expected. And, you know, I'll go back to kind of a famous story in Alabama circles to, I think, answer part of your question. You know, the famous story is when he was recruiting Julio Jones and all these different schools were offering him not only, you know, starting time and you know, any jersey number you want, whatever it is. He was also, let's be real here, being offered money under the table. And the famous line from Saban was like, I'd love to win with you, but I will win without you. Didn't offer him a starting role, didn't offer him the jersey he wanted. It was like, if you want to come in here and compete, you will have a chance to start, but I'm not giving you anything beforehand. I'm only offering you an opportunity. I'm not offering you anything guaranteed. And of course, Julio loved that idea and was an incredible player for Alabama. And so Saban's whole thing has always been about, he wants to build a culture that's incredibly competitive, where you have to earn your position every single day, right? And so having to offer a kid money before he even gets on campus goes against that whole idea. A kid demanding 10 grand, which is happening, just to visit Alabama, goes against everything Saban believes in. And kids coming into his office saying, if you don't get me $100,000, I'm transferring, which happened, goes against all of that. So I think he was trying to adapt. I think he was trying to evolve, but he was never going to get comfortable with that because it just goes against everything he built at LSU and Alabama. And so, if that world doesn't exist, he looks great for his age. He's still working hard. He's putting in long hours. I think he could have done a couple more years. His contract still went for, numerous more years into the future. So was he slowing down? Was he going to retire at some point in the next 5 years? Of course. But I think he could have gone at least a couple more if this world didn't, get flipped upside down the way it was.
John, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon on Labor Day. Man, great book. You teamed up with Armin Katayan to write The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. You can get it on Amazon.com and also all your local bookstores. You can pick it up there. I got to start reading it. I haven't finished it, but you guys did a great job with the book.
Well, I really appreciate you saying that, and thanks so much for having me on.
All righty.
Thank you.
John Telty, who was a co-author of The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. We'll be back with more second guests from the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi, right after this break. We're back here on the second guest show. Mike Dettelia along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We're at the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Bob, 2-minute warning. Boston College with a 14-3 lead over Florida State. You talk about getting whipped, and they're without their starting guard and one of their starting safeties. And we talked about this earlier, man. This was one of those watch out games.
Yep.
Does Mike Norvo get his team ready to bounce back? They got talent
in Ireland, but they got humbled in Ireland by Georgia,
and they still humbled because Boston College. With all the talent Florida State
Mike,
has.
Mike, the ACC is wide open. You know why I'm saying that it's wide open? Because, a couple of dark horse teams. I'm going to say North Carolina State struggled. They end up winning their first game. But you know who just lost to Vanderbilt? Virginia Tech. And, you talk
That's
about.
That's one of the bigger upsets.
Yeah, you talk about watch out for, I remember I heard a few people say Virginia Tech, North Carolina State.
Of them was Nick Saban.
Yes. And then you look at the U. I say the U's legit. But, Vanderbilt, Mike, that as of late, that has to be
the
biggest victory they've had in a while.
A long, long time. So, with 2 minutes left in the second quarter, Boston College with a 14-3 lead over Florida State goes to show how much they missed their starting quarterback. That cat was so good last year.
I ever told you, Mike and Charlie, I went on a recruiting trip with T-Bob to Boston College. They always have good offensive linemen. So when
and your boy Trapillo was there, and his son's playing at Boston College.
Yeah, Steve Trapillo's son's playing at Boston College. So I said, T-Bob, we got to go. They're recruiting me. So we go up to Boston College. They were playing North Carolina State, who had those awesome defensive linemen at that time. God, I'm trying to think. He played with the 49ers. But anyway.
Manny Lawson.
Yeah. And so anyway, it was that time, Mike. And then they had the other one at DN.
Yep.
His name slipped in my mind. But anyway. So North Carolina State's playing Boston College. But you know what I noticed at a college game? You never see this at LSU. We had a home game for Boston College. I never seen so many Patriots stuff on fans. It wasn't even no college stuff. It'd be like you go to an LSU game and you just see a bunch of Saints stuff. So I'm at a Boston College, North Carolina State game. And it's not no BC stuff. It's all the fans. I have all their, they're on the bandwagon. All this Patriot gear they're all dressed in.
I was telling Charlie, Steve Trapillo, who you good friends with, Steve was a big man. His son's 6'8". playing guard.
And Trapillo was 6'5", so 6'5", 6'8", that's a big gene pool.
You can see where he got it from. We'll be back to finish it up here on the Second Guest Show, live from Bay St. Louis Silver Slipper Casino, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're finishing up here at the Silver Slipper Casino Beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi, on our Second Guest Show. Mike to take you along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Bob, before this drive, and I think it's a 4.5 yard for Florida State. DJ Ungulay was 5 of 15 throwing the football, and he's sort of the same guy we've seen in years past.
So that's a transfer portal that didn't work.
Nope.
Right, well, wasn't he at Oregon State last year?
Was that Oregon State a year ago?
Yeah. No, I've watched him. He thinks he's better than what he really is.
So. No, he's a good athlete, he's not an accurate passer.
Yeah.
Bob, finish it up for us tonight.
All right, bon nuit, les gens. Good night, people. Who that? Go Saints. You got to win Sunday. Who that?
We're back here on the Second Guest Show. Mike to tell you along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. We're at the Silver Slipper Casino, beachside right here in Hancock County, Mississippi. Bob, 2-minute warning. Boston College with a 14-3 lead over Florida State. You talk about getting whipped. And they're without their starting guard and one of their starting safeties. And we talked about this earlier, man. This was one of those watch-out games.
Yep.
Does Mike Norvell get his team ready to bounce back? They got talent.
In Ireland, but they got humbled in Ireland by Georgia.
And they still humbled because Boston College – with all the talent Florida State
Mike,
has.
The ACC is wide open. You know why I'm saying that it's wide open? Because, you know, a couple of dark horse teams. I'm going to say North Carolina State struggled. They end up winning their first game. But you know who just lost to Vanderbilt? Virginia Tech. And, you know, you talk
that's
about.
That's one of the bigger upsets.
Yeah, you talk about watch out for, like, I remember I heard a few people say Virginia Tech, North Carolina State.
Of them was Nick Saban.
Yes. And then you look at the U. I say the U's legit. But, yeah, Vanderbilt, Mike, that as of late, that has to be
the biggest
victory they've had in a while.
A long, long time. So, with 2 minutes left in the second quarter, Boston College with a 14-3 lead over Florida State goes to show how much they missed their starting quarterback. And that cat was so good last year.
I ever told you, Mike, and Charlie, I went on a recruiting trip with T-Bob to Boston College. You know, they always have good offensive linemen. So
and your
there,
boy Trapillo was there, and his son's playing at Boston College.
Yeah, Steve Trapillo's son playing at Boston College. So I said, T-Bob, we got to go. They're recruiting me. So we go up to Boston College. They were playing North Carolina State, who had those awesome defensive linemen at that time. God, I'm trying to think. He played with the 49ers. But anyway.
Manny Lawson.
Yeah. And so anyway, it was that time, Mike, and then they had the other one at DN.
Yep.
His name slipped in my mind. But anyway. So North Carolina State's playing Boston College. But you know what I noticed at a college game? You never see this at LSU. We had a home game for Boston College. I've never seen so many Patriots stuff on fans. It wasn't even no college stuff. It'd be like you go to LSU game and you just see a bunch of Saints stuff. So I'm at a Boston College, North Carolina State game. And it's not no BC stuff. It's all like the fans will have all their, you know, they're on the bandwagon, all this Patriot gear they're all dressed in.
I was telling Charlie, Steve Trapillo, who you good friends with, Steve was a big man. His son's 6'8", playing guard.
And Trapillo was 6'5", so 6'5", 6'8", that's a big gene pool.
You can see where he got it from. We'll be back to finish it up here on the Second Guest Show, live from Bay St. Louis Silver Slipper Casino, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're finishing up here at the Silver Slipper Casino beachside in Hancock County, Mississippi, on our Second Guest Show. Mike to take you along with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Bob, before this drive, and I think it's a 4.5 yard for Florida State. DJ Ungulay was 5 of 15 throwing the football, and he sort of the same guy we've seen in years past.
So that's a transfer portal that didn't work.
Nope.
Right. Well, wasn't he at Oregon State last year?
Was that Oregon State a year ago?
Yeah. No, I've watched him. He thinks he's better than what he really is. So.
No, he's a good athlete. He's not an accurate passer.
Yeah.
Bob, finish it up for us tonight.
All right. Bon nuit, les gens. Good night, people. Who that? Go Saints. You got to win Sunday. Who that?
This time of year, the gear means more. the logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.